Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 13th, 2014. Scott Burton, your Monday host. Today, Tom Cosgrove will be here to tell us about his storytelling event, Healing Through Stories Beyond Grief and Loss, tonight at 360. And folks from Mudrooms will be on the show to tell us about Tuesday night's event. And we'll hear Senator Dennis Egan's story from September. And members of the Eagle Crest staff will be in to tell us about the Ski Town Throwdown 3. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. First, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News.
KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org.
Sunday, in support of Mapuche resistance, Elizabeth Trovall was there and filed this report.
Thousands of marchers filled the streets of Santiago, Chile, late Sunday morning to rally behind the Mapuche people and their fight to regain land rights and autonomy. Marchers played traditional Mapuche instruments and waved Mapuche and pan-indigenous flags, chanting, "Freedom, freedom," for the Mapuche who fought. The march coincided with the anniversary of Christopher Columbus' discovery of the Americas, not a day to celebrate, says Mapuche artisan Arturo Antanao.
This date's important because the dominant nation celebrates the discovery of America, and the indigenous nation repudiates that discovery because we were here before they discovered it.
After starting peacefully, violence broke out among isolated groups of mostly hooded anarchists who threw rocks at police, started small fires, and tore down metal fences and street signs. Police responded using water cannons and tear gas to control the crowd. Mapuche marchers and their supporters ended the event peacefully. The Mapuche make up between 4 and 10% of the local population, though many Chileans claim Mapuche ancestry. For National Native News, I'm Elizabeth Trovall in Santiago, Chile.
Today is officially recognized by the U.S. government as Columbus Day, but many communities across the country are instead celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day. Seattle and Minneapolis will officially recognize the day for the first time this year. The Minneapolis City Council voted in April to rename the holiday. The Seattle City Council voted last week to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. And Native American Day is also being celebrated in South Dakota today. As tribal members take part in events around the state, a Native American man and a non-Native teen who gave their lives trying to save a small boy in the Big Sioux River have been posthumously awarded the Carnegie Hero Medal. Jim Kent reports on that recognition.
It was an unusually warm late winter afternoon in 2013 when 16-year-old Madison Wallace jumped into the frigid Big Sioux River to save her 6-year-old brother. Shortly afterward, a passing stranger named Lyle Eagletail saw Madison struggling in the water and plunged in to save her. Within minutes, both Madison and Lyle were swept away in the foamy current, while the teen's brother managed to escape danger. Walter Rutkowski is president of the Carnegie Hero Fund Commission. Rutkowski says the Private Operating Fund Commission was founded in 1904 by Andrew Carnegie to recognize civilian heroism throughout the United States and Canada. The award isn't given to someone who saves a life, says Rutkowski, but to an individual who risks their own life in an attempt to save another.
The case was called to our attention because of the actions of Mr. Eagletail in going into the river after both Madison and her brother Garrett. And the further we looked into the case, we found that Madison was the first into the river to search for her brother. So we extended consideration to her as well.
Up to 1,000 applications are received by the Carnegie Hero Fund Commission each year. Not every application results in an award. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
President Obama has amended a disaster declaration for one New Mexico tribe. Last week, the president signed an order to release additional funds to assist Santa Clara Pueblo in its response to severe storms and flooding in September 2013. For National Native News, I'm Sarah Gustavus. We're online at nativenews.net.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Built by Native Business for Native Business, the Native American Contractors Association B2B Conference and Expo, November 10th to 12th. Participants engage in discussion, build contacts, get federal contracting training, and business development. Registration at nativecontractors.org.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Go out and vote on November 4th. Voting on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, October 13th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host at the board, and with me in the studio now is Mr. Tom Cosgrove. How are you?
How are you, Scott?
I am wonderful, and it's great to have you in the studio.
It's good to be here.
Taking time out of your preparation downstairs, huh?
That's correct. So I do it all. I was setting up chairs down there.
Now you're coming up here doing PR.
That's correct. Wear a lot of hats.
So tonight is Healing Through Stories Beyond Grief and Loss.
Yes, very much so.
And doors open at 5. Cameras roll at 5:30. We'll talk about the details in a minute. Before we get to that, you're a storyteller. How did that start?
How did storytelling start?
For you?
You know what? Little did I know I was always a storyteller.
Okay.
You know, I've been a writer my entire life, something I've played with, and I've always loved telling stories around the dinner table or whatever. And so as I tried getting things published and had a very unfulfilling experience as a published writer, mm-hmm. I said, I got these great stories, and what I would really love to do is see if they would work with an audience.
And so you were doing print and submitting to magazines and stuff like
That's
that.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then adding the voice like you're doing now, that made them come alive.
Well, first of all, I was writing stuff from my experience, and I was passionate about it. And No matter how well I wrote it, the passion didn't come through.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, I'm going to try this. And it took a lot for me because I'm not a natural performer. I've had to learn the performance part of
right.
this.
Right. You were telling me about a situation you had where it just didn't go so well.
Oh, gosh. We're basically filming tonight to be broadcast later on this fall. And I did a live TV broadcast many years ago when I was starting. We're talking 25 years ago. And I had a terrible experience where I just basically froze on live TV. Mm-hmm. So there's this sense of revisiting these old fears or facing my old
Good
fears.
Good for you. Good for you for facing those.
Yeah.
That's great. And since that broadcast, you said 25 years ago or something like that, among other things, you're a big part of Mudrooms, right?
I am. Yeah. I'm on the board of Mudrooms and have been involved since darn near the very first.
And how has that shaped your storytelling abilities or take on storytelling?
You know what? What it's done for me, it's not really changed my storytelling. What it's done is reinforce my passion. Mm. Because one of the things, it hasn't always been me telling stories. I've always said, well, tell me a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where'd you go? Tell me a story about that. Just don't tell me I went to Florida. I mean, tell me an event that happened that marks the trip for you. So when I found this, one of the things that I did a number of years ago, my family and I took off on a 3-month road trip across the U.S. Mm-hmm. We bought a van in D.C. and drove back to Alaska. The kids had never really seen the lower 48, and I told stories along the way. I put together this show about Alaska. And one of the things that I did was visit the Moth in Chicago when I was there. Now, the Moth is another storytelling event similar to Mudrooms. Okay. Real people, real story. They came out of New York City. So when I saw this Moth event, I'm like, okay, this is it. I believe in people. We all have these stories, and we all have some interesting ones. And if we make a venue for people to share them, really, people plug into this. And the thing that's happened with Mudrooms in 3 years, it's gone from a handful of people to getting over 200 people every month and some incredible stories. So all it's done to me is made me more passionate about storytelling.
Well, great. And so tonight you're doing something a little different, Healing Through Stories Beyond Grief and Loss. What was the initial inspiration for this episode, if you will?
this show?
This show, yeah.
I was 20-some years ago, I was with my father when he died, and it totally shaped my view of life. And since that time, I have been very open to sharing my experiences and hearing other people's. And over the years, I've collected a number of stories that can only be better termed the grief genre or the loss genre.
Sure.
And you know what? These are like some of our most powerful stories. And people don't tell them normally. And when you actually inquire about these, you hear some absolutely incredible things. And so this is a series of stories that I have put together. I first performed this in February of 2013.
Okay.
And have since have done it in a number of venues, including a number of times out at the university for the Certified Nursing Assistance Program. And the good thing about these stories, people are like, oh, man, that's such a downer. And the thing is, this is not. This is there's humor here. There's poignant points, and it's uplifting. You know, when people walk away, they're not going to say, oh, man, that was a downer. They're going to say, wow.
Sure, and a tool, I guess, for people to help process grief and loss, right? Just like you telling the story about your dad helps you process that, I imagine. Or it did back then, anyway.
It did, and it still does. I mean, still telling these some of these stories from 20 years, it's still there's emotion there. Yeah. I think really the goal of this is saying that, you know what, we're not that much different from each other. We have these common experiences, and they're important to share. And there are people around us who are willing to listen to them. And if you share them, it's going to be good for them, and it's going to be good for you.
Okay, and so. You are going to be downstairs in at 360, the performance space that's here, 360 North's performance space in the KTOO building, that wonderful new studio.
It's beautiful.
And it's going to be filmed.
It is, if that's the correct term these days, filmed. Is that the correct term?
I don't know. I like it. I like using that word. It makes me feel a little more sophisticated.
I was going to say, well, it's going to be recorded anyway, and then rebroadcast sometime in the fall. We're also going to be filling it. It's going to appear in a CD that's going to be offered to hospice and other death support, grief support groups. And we're going to be modeling some behavior about how this can be used in their work. So that's all going to be part of it. And I'm looking for an audience because, you know what, stories don't come alive without an audience.
And it's free.
And it's free because of wonderful underwriters like 360 North and Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Yeah, so what's it going to look like tonight? Who's involved and what can an audience member expect?
So what's involved is I am basically the main person on stage. I have a set that runs about 45 minutes. I've got about four different stories that covers death, dying, grief, and caregiving. And after that, Pat McClear is going to be a moderator for a second portion of our show. And if you don't know Pat, she's an incredible storyteller.
Awesome.
And so she's going to be the moderator for the second portion of the show. And we're going to have some surprise audience members that are going to stand up and share some stories of their loss.
Okay. And again, doors open at 5 and the cameras roll at 5:30.
That's correct.
It's free. How long do you think that's going
to
run?
The whole thing will be an hour.
1 hour.
So you'll be out of there soon after 6:30.
Man, sounds like a great event.
Yeah, and it's quick. And I really, you know what, I hate to, it sounds self-serving, but I, honest to gosh, people that have come to this, almost all of them said, wow, thanks. That was powerful. It meant a lot to them. So this isn't, you know, people say, that death stuff, whatever. You know what? You're going to be dealing with it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, it's going to enter your life. And you might as well hear it or think about it in a situation or a venue that's light, that's non-threatening and uplifting. And that's what I provide.
And is there a target demographic for this, age-wise, all ages?
Death haunts us all now. I think, you know, it's for the baby boomers, this is a group of people who are dealing with aging and dying parents.
Right.
And so, obviously, the baby boomers are dealing with this. But there is no age group that, you know, losing young people who lose their peers way prematurely. We have no shortage of that. We're in a city where, of course, people go out on their boats and don't come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is real powerful stuff. So it's all around us. And to ignore it and not talk about it doesn't do anyone any good.
I hear you. Well, Tom, thank you for coming in today. Tom's presentation, TV recording.
TV recording.
Healing Through Stories Beyond Grief and Loss is tonight, Monday night, downstairs at 360.
2 hours. Come.
Free.
Absolutely
five
free.
5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Cameras roll at 5:30. Should be on time. Cameras do.
No, they're going to shut the doors at 5:30. If you're not there, we're going. They shoot it as if it's live. So, you know, warts and all, and we try to, they try to put it all together so they don't have to edit it and it's ready for broadcast.
Absolutely. Tom, thank you for your time. Is there anything we're missing? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so, but please join me.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
All right.
My leg.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 13th, 2014. Scott Burton here with you. Little Angel Band there from George Jones, Ralph Stanley, and Vince Gill. At about 3:30, we're going to have the folks in from Mudrooms to tell us about tomorrow night's event, but I have a little extra time on the show today, so we are going to play a Mudroom story from the September event by Senator Dennis Egan. Here it is.
Our next speaker, you might recognize as former Juneau Assemblyman and Mayor, and as your current Senator representing the capital city in the state legislature. Dennis Egan grew up in Juneau, graduating from JDHS in 1965. Dennis loves all things radio. He was named Alaska Broadcaster of the Year in 1990 and inducted into the Broadcasters Hall of Fame in 2001. As host of KINY's Problem Corner, he might be the only Alaska politician who has as many voters recognize his voice as his name. Dennis and his wife, Linda, live on Douglas Island and have 2 daughters and 4 granddaughters. Please help me welcome Dennis to the stage.
She's the number one chief of staff for anyone in the legislature, and I wouldn't be doing this if she wasn't. I don't... And, you know, I have to hear from the Mudrooms goddess throughout the session and during the interim. And so I made the mistake of sending an email to another staffer for Representative Minos, and she says, you ought to tell that story. Oh, God. Anyway, it all happened, it started, when I was in high school. I had a recording studio in a place I used to live on the third floor. But all my clients had to go through the side door. And I recorded what's called the Ice Block Delegation. And that was before internet, emails, things like that. And I would record them and send their tapes to KNOM and radio station KDLG and Dillingham and other public stations that were just coming on the air at that time. And I became friends with a representative from Dillingham called Joe McGill. And his son decided that he didn't like to fish anymore. And so he said, would you like to be my deckhand? I said, well, sure, because I was a box boy at Foodland at the time, making $1.25 an hour. And I said, I jumped at the chance. So I flew to Dillingham, and boy, his daughter was good looking, but that's another story. So anyway, his boat was at South Naknek. He fished for CRPA, Columbia River Packers, which is now Bumblebee Seafoods at South Naknek. And we went on strike. So all Joe McGill, was gripe about all these people, these scabs from Monterey, California, that were stealing our salmon, and they were going to fish for a lower price. Well, a few of the Alaskans knew how to use an anchor and drive it across gill nets. Actually, that's another story. But so anyway, we spent a lot of time going to Igigik and Leavelock, and went up close to Lake Eliamna, and just goofing off because we didn't have anything to do because we were on strike. So the season ended, and I barely had enough money to afford a plane fare home. And I thought, this is a bad idea. But I got an offer from Columbia River Packers to be a deckhand on a power scow. So I readily accepted. And when the poundage was low, the deckhands and the power scow operators didn't make that much money. But if the haul was high, you made an awful lot of money. So I went to South Naknek the next year as a deckhand on the power scow Beaver. It was an 87-foot power scow, and I had a great year. It was just, the fish were incredible. One of the folks was from Southeast Alaska, Ray Paddock, and he had a permit, and it was based in Kluwak, and we were counting fish so much that I had actually fallen asleep with my fish counter. And I just fell asleep, and the counter was still going. And Ray went in and had breakfast and came out and said, this is how many fish I gave him. And he even brailed them for me. But he was a great guy, and they were all very honest, and I made a lot of money in my junior year. So I readily signed on for my senior year. It beat working at Foodland. And it was just, the last summer was even better. And the poundage was incredible. We were working 14 sevens and we had 24 hour openings, and we were, you know, working 24, 36 hours. It was just an incredible summer, and here I am 17 years old, and we're making all kinds of money. I paid for my brand spanking new Plymouth Satellite. I paid for my first year at Oregon Tech, all because of sockeyes in Bristol Bay. But there was a problem. The skipper got mad at the chief engineer my last year and decided to fire him. Back then, in South Naknek, there were no troopers. There were no VPSOs. There was no one. And if you could afford to walk a mile, you could drink, and the chief engineer did a lot of that, and they fired him. Well, they made me, at 17, chief engineer of the Beaver, and they gave me a raise. I don't remember what it was. It was not very much. It was like $1 or $2 an hour. Anyway, so we're packing canned salmon that had been canned at South Naknek to the China, which you may remember was the ship that, the Alaska steamship that hit the dock in Valdez during the earthquake and ended up killing 31 people at the Valdez dock. But the China survived and retired her in 1971. However, the China was loading salmon from Bristol Bay that they were taking south to Portland to put layoffs on it, all that fancy stuff. And the captain offered us ice cream. Well, I've been in Bristol Bay for 90 days now, and I forgot what ice cream tasted like. So, but we had so many cans on our power scow that we were really low in the water. Well, the cans came off, but we were still low in the water. So the skipper, Sig Sandvik, said, go down and you're the engineer, go down to the engine room and make sure that bilge pumps are working. We had twin 671 Jimmies on the scow. So like an idiot, I go down there and the belt's not turning on one of the bilge pumps. And these are good-sized diesel engines. So what do I do? Because I'm thinking about the ice cream. So, I'm sorry. So I grab the belt, and I cut two fingers off. I cut my ring finger on my right hand and my middle finger on my right hand, and they medevaced me to Anchorage. Well, there were no nurses at South Naknek. So what do? They wrap me in gauze. They put my fingers on ice, and medevac me to Anchorage. And how do they do for pain reliever? Vodka. Well, Dr. Mills, who treated frostbite patients that climbed Mount McKinley at the time, did a tremendous job. And I have two fingers that don't really do anything. And he put a fake fingernail on this finger. But I spent 6 months in a cast, getting circulation back, but now I have fingers. And sorry, that's my story of Bristol Bay. I could go on.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, frontier scientists research the thermal power potential at Pilgrim Hot Springs. The National Park Service short film series is next at 8:30. Unlocking the Secret of Ourselves at 9 unveils micro-worlds inside us all. At 9:30, Life on the Line, Out of the Rubble, tells the story of courage and survival after the 2012 earthquake in Haiti. All tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 13th, 2014. With me now in the studio is Alita Buss, welcome of Mudrooms.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, you're getting ready for another event tomorrow night, right?
That's right. Tomorrow night, where our theme is small world.
Okay. Do you happen to have some of the names of your presenters memorized?
Yes. So Phil Campbell, who's the Northern Light pastor, is going to be speaking.
All right.
We've tried to get Phil for a while, and he's such a good speaker, so we're excited about that. No pressure, though, Phil. And then Kristen Garreau. She's the principal at Yakus, I think, right now.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Hannon, who's a teacher at the high school.
Okay.
She's very good. She's told before, and she told a first time story about falling in love for the first time, and that was really fun. And then our Mudrooms board member, Katie Spielberger, is telling a story.
Fun.
And she always has a good way of telling, and those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Sure, and we'll give out the website in a little while, mudrooms.org, if you know, people can go and check that out. And if folks aren't familiar with mudrooms, we just heard a piece by Senator Dennis Egan from the September event. Was that themed on the water, maybe?
On the water, yes. You heard him talking about how he lost a couple of fingers out in Bristol Bay commercial fishing as a teenager. That was a really fun story. And I work for Dennis as my day job in the Capitol. And so I've been working on him to try to tell that story. It fit perfectly with the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of one of those true Alaska stories. So.
And in case we have some folks who are not familiar with mudrooms, Lita, you're one of the founders, right? You and Amanda?
Yeah.
Back in what year did you start it?
November 2011 was our first event. So this is our fourth season.
Wow.
And it's been really fun. We're doing 9 events this season, and we have a full board of volunteers who help organize the event every time. So our storyboard is Rich Moniak, who I think is on the board here at K2, has been, and some other great folks, Tom Cosgrove, who was on earlier with you talking about his storytelling event at 5. And
Pat Roach, right?
At Thunder Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Clint Farr, Katie, maybe.
Yeah, Steve Suing is a new board member who just finished running the Chicago Marathon, so he won't be there tomorrow night. But.
And so I think back in November of 2011, was it you started at the Rookery?
Yeah, we started at the Rookery. It was like standing room only. We were like, this is a totally shot-in-the-dark thing, but
right.
People showed up, and it was a huge success. And so we were actually over capacity there and had to find the next biggest venue downtown, which we went to Holy Trinity and were there for a couple years. And then the rest of that season and the following season. And this is our second season at Northern Light, and it's worked out really well. They have a great sound system and more parking availability. So, and yeah, tomorrow night's the first night with the proceeds going to AWARE, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so it fits perfectly. We did our September event donations to the Northern Light re-roofing project. So AWARE will benefit for the next 4 months, and then SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, for the rest of our season 4.
Yeah, I think that's a great model that you have. All proceeds go to local nonprofits.
Yeah.
And is $7?
$7 at the door, so it won't break the bank, hopefully. And yeah, we have live music by Ian Leonard tomorrow night.
Cool.
And so it should be a good show.
It should. So 4 seasons for you now. What have been some surprises for you over this time?
Well, it was a surprise how popular it's been. You know, we really fill the house every night, and so people have just been really enthusiastic about mudrooms. And you know, I run into people in town, and it's, hey, when's the next mudrooms, and what are the story, you know, what are the stories going to be? And it's just been surprising how many stories. I mean, it's not a surprise, I guess, that people in Juneau have stories to tell, because of course there's lots of interesting people here. But yeah.
Well, good. So tomorrow will be at 7:00 at the Northern Light United Church down in the Federal Flats, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So come and sit and listen. We do have a full roster, but if you're interested in telling a story, we're always recruiting for the other spots in the season, and you can go online to mudrooms.org to look at the dates and the themes for those dates to see if something strikes, you know, a chord and reminds you of a story that happened that you might want to share.
Sure. Can you think of what the next one is off the top of your head?
The next one is sibling rivalry in November.
Fun. And do you know if you have any spots for it? Or
I think so.
Oh, cool.
I think we do have some openings. Do you have a sibling rivalry story that you want to share?
I don't. But I'm sure somebody out there does. So to sign up, they should either come to the event tomorrow, or they should go to mudrooms.org, right?
Yep, and there's a link to sign up on there.
All right, Alita, thank you so much for coming in today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, no, thanks for having us.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow night.
All right.
And here is the Writer's Almanac from Monday. It's the 13th of October, 2014. It was on this day, 1792, that the builders laid the cornerstone for the White House. George Washington selected the site for Washington, D.C., where the Potomac and the Anacostia Rivers come together. Washington was chosen as the place for the capital because southern states distrusted putting power into the hands of the federal government, and so, to ease their opposition, the capital was moved from Philadelphia and New York to the south. Washington was little more than a wilderness at the time, but the house went up. James Hoban was the architect. There was a competition. Thomas Jefferson submitted a plan, but lost. President John Adams and his wife Abigail moved into the house in 1800. It was cold, it was wet, it was drafty, there was no yard, no fence. Abigail hung the family's laundry in the east room. It's the birthday of Margaret Thatcher, born in Grantham, England, 1925, who said, "Being powerful is like being a lady. If you have to tell people you are, you aren't." The novelist and short story writer Conrad Richter, born Pine Grove, Pennsylvania, 1890 on this day. His father, grandfathers, all of his uncles were preachers. He got a job as a newspaper reporter, wrote fiction on the side. And then in the late 1920s, his wife got sick and doctors suggested a change of climate, so they moved to New Mexico. And Richter got obsessed by the history of the Southwest, traveled around interviewing old men and women, pioneers, looking at diaries and letters. He wrote a book about the Southwest, Early Americana and Other Stories, and then a trilogy about frontier life in Ohio, The Trees, The Fields, The Town, the names of the three volumes. And it's the birthday of Lenny Bruce, the comedian, born Leonard Schneider, on Long Island, 1925. Got his start in comedy working as an MC in a strip club. Lenny Bruce, who said the role of a comedian is to make the audience laugh at a minimum of once every 15 seconds. Here's a poem for today by Michael Blumenthal, "For My Son Reading Harry Potter." How lovely to be lost as you are now in someone else's thoughts, an imagined world of witchcraft, wizardry, and clans that takes you in so utterly. All the ceaseless background noise of life's insistent pull and drag soon fades, and you are left, a young boy, captured in attention's undivided days, as I was once when books defined a world no trouble could yet penetrate, or others spoil, or regret stain, when between covers, under covers, all is safe and sure, and each Odysseus makes it home again, and every transformation is to bird or bush or to a star, a twinkle in some firmament of light, or to a club that lets you and all others in. Oh, how I wish for you that life may let you turn and turn these pages in whose spell time is frozen, as is pain and fright and loss, before you're destined to be lost again in that disordered and distressing book your life will write for you and cannot change. A poem of Michael Blumenthal, "For My Son Reading Harry Potter," from No Hurry Poems 2000-2012, published by Etruscan Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Did you know that 55% of Juneau women have experienced domestic or sexual violence?
Did you know that 85% of women with disabilities experience domestic violence? October is Disability Awareness Month
and Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Everyone deserves to live in safety.
If you or someone you know is living with abuse, please contact AWARE at 586-1090 for confidential support.
This message brought to you by SAIL and AWARE.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon on Monday, October 13th, 2014. And I have a little musical interlude, some Tony Rice Unit with The Old Gray Coat. You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, October 13th, 2014. With me now are some folks from Eagle Crest, Mr. Matt Lillard and Jeff Reclow. Welcome you two.
Thanks for having us this afternoon, Scott.
It's nice to have you. And Matt, you're the general manager up there at Eagle Crest, is that right?
That's correct.
And Jeff, we were just getting this, you're the director of?
Sales and Marketing and Snow Sports School.
Okay. So how are things going looking into this 2014-2015 season, which is going to be epically snowy?
Yeah, it's been, you know, it was a wet summer that we all experienced. We're hoping that moisture continues and it just gets a little bit colder and we get tons of snow coming up here this winter. But we had a productive summer. We're looking forward to another great winter up on the mountain. And, you know, our past sales have been going well. It sounds like everybody's getting pretty excited for the season. So we're less than 2 months out from scheduled opening day.
Mm-hmm. We've seen some termination dust. Is stuff starting to stick at the top up there?
We had some. A little bit stuck. We had some hope, and then this most recent storm pushed some warm temperatures all the way up to well above our summit. So hopefully it looks like the forecast calls for something this week. And then we'll start trending colder and colder. I'm hearing it's getting cold farther up north, so it'll come our way.
All right, sounds good. And you said you had a productive summer. Remind us what happens up there during the summer.
Well, I mean, we've got a huge new lodge coming online called the Porcupine Lodge, and that's being done by an outside contractor. But that's probably the biggest thing that the guests are going to experience. But our staff up at the mountain spends all winter doing maintenance items. We've been working on the Eagle's Nest at the summit, rehabbing
that. Yeah.
You know, the marketing and admin teams work on past sales and websites and marketing programs for this coming season. So I think it definitely slows down from the winter season. It's by no means comes to a standstill. There's still lots of stuff to do to prep for the season.
Oh, I bet. Speaking of prepping for the season, I bet there are tickets and passes available for purchase at this time.
Yep, we're right in the middle of our early bird sale. And so you can buy your season pass and get your direct-to-lift access along with quite a few other great perks that go along with that season pass. And you can find that information on our website at skijuno.com.
And, Jeffra, how long does the early bird thing go?
The early bird sale goes on until November 15th.
Okay.
And then pass prices jump up $200 for an adult pass. So it's a good idea to get your pass because we all know it's going to be an awesome winter. I mean, you said it, Scott.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Among other things going on, too, is this Ski Town Throwdown, right? Which we got second in North America last year.
Yep.
Eaglecrest, yep. Hello.
I know. It was pretty fun last year. It was Eaglecrest's inaugural visit into Powder Magazine's Ski Town Throwdown. And we were the Cinderella story. That's what Powder Magazine called us. And we made it all the way to second place. We were the Great White North champions and then went on to get second place by losing to Crested Butte, Colorado by, about 90 votes, I think it was.
It was close, and we almost pulled it out. So we're hoping to make another run at it this year.
Yeah, and I'm trying to – there was that quote by one of the editors, right, or John Davies. Yeah, Powder editor John Davies.
Yep. Yep, and he called us the Cinderella story and the Great Pumpkin Ride, and they found they had a spokesman for us who was Timmy, and Timmy was a great asset to our marketing team and really pushed us through. But we couldn't have got as far as we did last year without the help of an amazing community of Juneau.
Right,
and so we find ourselves in it again this year, which is very exciting. So we're in the first round. Our voting is tomorrow.
Wow.
Between 8:30 in the morning and 8:30 tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. And unlike last year, you can just go right to powder.com and vote. They have a voting link right on their website at powder.com, and we'll have one on our website at skijuno.com as well. And
it was Facebook last year, right?
It was Facebook last year. They got a lot of comments about Facebook. I believe there was one elementary school that even sent an email off to Powder, to the editors of Powder, complaining because the kids wanted to vote for Eaglecrest, and they could not. So we're pretty excited, so we just want to get the word out and urging everyone to vote.
So it sounds a little more accessible now that you can just go to powder.com or skijuno.com to vote.
Exactly, yeah. They're not tying it to Facebook anymore, so it's more of a direct link. And, you know, we certainly got calls up at the mountain, people wanting to show their support, and we're very thankful for that. Now we'll be able to point them to the right spot and get their votes counted.
And, Matt, you and I were talking about this a little. What results did you see from the voting last year?
Well, certainly our name, Eaglecrest, being a ski area in Juneau, is getting out there more and more to the skiing community. We saw it this spring when we traveled around to some different conferences. And while, you know, we did not see any quantifiable numbers of increased visits from outside of Juneau, it's a slow process to build that market. And it's a really big step for us to be, you know, to be a known name as far as an option when you're looking to come up to to Alaska to go skiing. So it's great to see. We're, you know, happy we're going to see it again. I also think, and Jeff can speak a little more to this, but a lot more press is calling us, and we're becoming a story that they want to write about. And it's, you know, these are the sorts of things that we need to do to grow our market.
Absolutely.
I think, Scott, as you well know, Eagle Crest is amazing. We have awesome terrain, amazing snow conditions. The scenery is outstanding, and we know that. So now this is just allowing us to tell our story a little bit more and let people know that we're here. Are we going to see any increased lift lines from people flocking in from down south? Oh, probably not. But I think it's really fun to tell the story. And we know that Juneau is an awesome community. And I think it's just great to highlight Juneau and to highlight Eagle Crest in more winter setting, where we're usually out there nationally in the summertime. So it's great to be out there in the wintertime as well.
Yeah, I remember hearing some hardcore locals last year like, man, I'm not going to vote because what if I vote and then everybody comes here and there's crazy lift lines? Like, forget it.
Yeah, we don't think so. It's mostly we're looking at it as bragging rights. And again, it allows us to be able to tell our story. And we're pretty excited to be included and excited Powder Magazine thought to bring us back in for another year this year, and looking for everyone's help to get us past round one into round two. So
absolutely,
that voting is tomorrow.
Yeah, support our locally owned ski area, our city-owned ski area, and probably inversely increase the economy here in Juneau, folks coming up. So that's 8:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. tomorrow.
Tomorrow, correct. So Tuesday,
Alaska
October
time.
14th. That is Alaska time.
Okay.
So there was some confusion last year, and this year it's great. They spelled out the rules a little bit more. Everybody's pretty excited. So.
And we're going head-to-head with Fernie?
With Fernie, British Columbia. So that's a larger ski area than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that we have an awesome community, so we're reaching out to everyone and getting everyone to vote.
Absolutely. So please vote tomorrow, everybody, 8:30 to 8:30 all day pretty much at powder.com, or you can go to skijuneau.org.
.com. Skijuneau.com.
Okay, great. Anything else going on that you two want to tell us about?
No, just, you know, we're prepping for this new season up at the mountain, and, you know, always check for more information at skijuneau.com. Check us out on Facebook. There's a lot of great winter events coming up this fall. The ski sail and swap is on November 15th. And scheduled opening day is December 6th, so bring on the snow.
Matt Lillard and Jeff Reclow.
Thanks, and I think just one other thing, if you are interested in sharing any of your experiences at Eagle Crest, either winter or summer, you can share them at hashtag SkiTownThrowdown.
Oh,
and that kind of lets another way to let the world know what an awesome place we have. So that's hashtag SkiTownThrowdown. And that's a mouthful.
Great. Thanks again, Jeffra, and thanks, Matt. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And good luck. Everyone get out and vote tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 13th, 2014. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, Ken Fix will be your host. He'll talk with Joe Orsi about Saturday's Garlic Lover's Potluck. We'll learn about the fourth annual Grand Poetry Slam. Bonnie Herbold of Riverside Herbs will highlight her home-based vinegar and olive oil business. And High School Career Center's Terry Calvin will be here to talk about this year's college fair, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more Tuesday at 3 on KTOO News. If you miss a Juno Afternoon or want to hear it again, you can find it in the local programs link on our homepage at ktoo.org. The weather tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows 38 to 44. And Tuesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain showers, highs around 49. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs 44 to 50. And let's see, Thursday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 48, lows 36 to 42, creeping down a bit there. And going into the weekend, rain likely, lows around 40, highs around 49.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Stay tuned for All Things Considered in just about a minute.